Ekatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome to the deep dive.
Today, we are walking straight into one of the most notoriously difficult and maybe philosophically critical figures in Western thought, Donatien Alphonse François, the Marquis de Sade.
And we really have to start by, you know, clearing the air right away. Mm. When you hear Sade or the word sadism, it immediately brings up scandal, historical pathology, really horrific stuff.
Absolutely. It's almost unavoidable. But we're going to try and tackle this figure through a serious scholarly lens using John Phillips' book, The Marquis de Sade. Phillips makes a case, a strong one, that we've actually done Sade a disservice by only focusing on the sensational. Mm. He argues we need to recognize him as a systematic, rigorous, and yes, profoundly unsettling philosopher and literary innovator. Yeah, that's the essential point Phillips makes. His core thesis isn't just that Sade wrote shocking fiction. It's that his entire body of work is a radical and surprisingly coherent critique, a kind of sustained, brutal assault on the very philosophical underpinnings of the 18th century Enlightenment.
Okay, wow. Let's unpack that idea because it's pretty explosive. So our mission here is to dive into Phillips's framework, how Sade essentially took the Enlightenment's own tools, you know, reason, materialism, individualism,
right,
and used them to reveal what he believed was this sort of nihilistic void right at the heart of a world without God. Phillips suggests he forces us to confront the absolute limits of human freedom and cruelty, making him this crucial, if deeply disturbing, prophet of modernity.
And to navigate this really challenging material, we're relying on John Phillips. He's a distinguished academic, specializes in French literature, critical theory, 18th century French thought.
And his background is so important here because he's an expert in those post-structuralist thinkers, people like Foucault, Derrida, Bataille. The very figures who later really had to grapple with Sade's legacy. He gets the intellectual context where Sade was finally taken seriously.
Exactly. And that expertise gives him, I think, the necessary critical distance. It's almost impossible to read Sade without getting bogged down in, frankly, the repulsive content. Phillips isn't trying to defend the man or the actions, not at all.
No.
But he treats Sade as a serious intellectual architect. He focuses on the structure, the arguments, the literary language, the rhetorical tricks, showing us that Sade's method was systematic. It wasn't just random depravity.
Okay, so Phillips is trying to rescue Sade from the myth, the scandal. What's the book's overall goal then?
It's essentially a critical introduction. It aims to give intellectually curious readers a rigorous but still accessible roadmap to Sade's life, his works, and his philosophical legacy.
And the central idea, as you said, is that Sade basically weaponized literature.
Yeah, he launched this all-out assault on the foundations of Western civilization. Mm-hmm. Religion, law, the family, ethics. He used extreme language, extreme scenarios to test the very boundaries of human transgression and society's capacity for, well, tolerance.
So Phillips guides us through the biographical context. First saw it as this sort of marginalized aristocrat, his scandals, those decades he spent locked up in pre-revolutionary France.
By the Bastille and elsewhere. But the real journey Phillips takes us on is into the, let's call it the literary inferno, through works like Justine, Juliet, and Philosophy in the Bedroom.
And that's where the system starts to emerge.
Precisely. Phillips introduces us to Sade's radical atheism, his reframing of nature, not as the kind benevolent force Rousseau talked about, but as this chaotic, destructive, cyclical machine.
Okay.
And central to it all is the figure of the libertine, this sovereign individual who consciously and rationally chooses to live beyond good and evil.
Let's get into the specifics then, starting with the man and the myth. Phillips talks a lot about Sade's life experience, especially confinement. Those long stretches in prison weren't just punishment, were they? Phillips argues they became his philosophical laboratory.
It's a powerful idea, isn't it? Deprived of physical freedom, totally subject to the arbitrary power of the state and his family, Sade explored the absolute limits of intellectual freedom. His rage wasn't just personal frustration. Phillips frames it as deeply ideological.
Fueled by hypocrisy.
Exactly. The staggering hypocrisy of the French aristocracy and the church preaching piety while, you know, practicing vice behind closed doors. He saw it all.
So if the prison cell was the lab, how did this rage translate into his literary experiments? Let's start with Justine, the unfortunate virtue. It's famously painful to read because Justine is relentlessly good, always trying to do the right thing, and she suffers endlessly for it.
Mm-hmm. Phillips analyzes Justine as this deliberate, absolutely brutal parody of the sentimental novels popular at the time. You know, the kind of stories promising that virtue would eventually be rewarded by fate.
Right, like Camilla or something.
Saad takes that promise and just tortures it, literally and figuratively.
But wait, if the point is just punishing virtue, isn't that just like a literary gimmick? Is it really philosophy?
That's the question Phillips pushes us towards. For Saad, the suffering isn't random. It's the proof of his philosophical point. In a world without God, without divine justice, Justine's unwavering morality is actually a fatal handicap. She gets exploited precisely because she follows rules and ethics that the powerful know are just arbitrary social constructs.
Okay. So then he flips it with her sister, Juliet, the triumphant vice, where Justine fails by being virtuous, Juliet embraces selfishness, crime, depravity, and she achieves incredible success, wealth, power. She's the anti-Justine.
Totally. She embodies that sovereign libertine ideal. She understands Saad's cynical view of nature as destructive, and she consciously chooses to align herself with that destruction. By actively ditching empathy, pity, law, she achieves total success and freedom. She becomes, in a way, a force of nature herself, unstoppable because she recognizes no moral barriers.
This feels like where Phillips's analysis becomes really crucial, especially for works like The 120 Days of Sodom. It's Saad's most extreme book, often dismissed as just pornography or shock value.
Phillips argues it's something far darker and more intellectually deliberate. He frames it as a systematic, dark encyclopedia of human transgression.
An encyclopedia? That sounds chilling.
It is. It's organized with this terrifying, almost bureaucratic precision, cataloging, classifying every conceivable perversion. The real horror, as Phillips points out, isn't just the graphic acts themselves, but the cold, rational, systematic logic used to document, organize, and justify every single atrocity. It represents what Phillips calls the zero degree of humanity.
The point where empathy just collapses into cold, instrumental reason. That cold rationality, the accounting of atrocity, that's maybe the hardest part to deal with, because it makes the philosophy harder to just dismiss as madness. It's especially clear in Philosophy in the Bedroom, which has his most explicit political statement, right?
Yeah, that embedded pamphlet. Frenchman, one more effort if you wish to be Republicans.
Yeah.
It says Saad basically telling the New Republic, if you really believe in absolute liberty and materialism, you have to be consistent.
Go all the way.
Go all the way. True political freedom, he argued, required the abolition of Christian morality and state acceptance of all sexual impulses, even incest and murder, because they were supposedly natural drives the state had no business regulating. It was a radical provocation designed to expose the hypocrisy, the limits of the revolution's own ideals.
And this provocation, as Phillips shows, didn't just disappear. Saad was pretty much ignored for a century, then rediscovered by the surrealists in the 20th century. They loved his imaginative liberation.
Mm-hmm. And then he became indispensable for those key 20th century French thinkers. Foucault, Bataille, others saw Saad as pivotal for understanding the complex, often disturbing link between sexuality and power. A relationship our modern society is still struggling to understand.
Okay, let's try to boil this down into the key themes Phillips identifies. The first one feels the most critical, the critique of Enlightenment reason. Phillips argues Saad isn't against reason. He's its most terrifyingly consistent follower.
Right. If you accept that only material existence is real and you throw out God and divine law, Saad argues reason dictates that the only real law is the law of the strongest. He takes materialism and individualism to their logical nihilistic endpoint.
Where good and evil are just, what, social constructs? Tools to control people?
Pretty much. Just tools for the powerful to keep the weak in line.
Which connects to the second theme, nature as immoral and destructive. He completely rejects Rousseau's idea of a kind, benevolent nature.
Violently rejects it. For Saad, nature is this chaotic engine of destruction and creation, constantly cycling. Cruelty and creation are equally natural parts of the process. So the virtuous act for the libertine is to imitate nature by embracing cruelty and destruction.
That's his cynical justification for atrocity, then, based on the physical world.
Essentially, yeah. It's a justification based on a brutal interpretation of physical, non-moral laws.
Okay, third theme, the sovereignty of the individual. This sounds like absolute moral and emotional independence.
It is. And to get there, the libertine has to actively root out empathy and pity. Saad sees them as weaknesses, chains that bind the strong to the weak. It's the ultimate dark expression of self-interest.
And that leads to the final theme Phillips highlights, the fusion of power, pleasure, and pain. The erotic is tied completely to domination.
Inseparable. Phillips shows that for Saad's libertines, the highest pleasure isn't just physical release, it's the intellectual satisfaction of total domination. The victim's suffering becomes the undeniable, visceral proof of the libertine's absolute power and freedom.
Wow. Phillips's book basically catalogs these incredibly disturbing philosophical ideas. And they aren't just random lines, they form the intellectual structure of Sade's whole system.
Definitely. Take this statement, paraphrased from Sade. The idea of God is the sole wrong for which I cannot forgive mankind. That just perfectly captures his radical atheism. He sees belief in God not just as wrong, but as the ultimate chain on human freedom, the source of all repressive morality, all guilt.
And then there's his complete inversion of morality. Cruelty, he says, paraphrased again, is nothing more than the energy of a man who has not been corrupted by civilization. Therefore, it is a virtue, not a vice.
That flips the script entirely, doesn't it? Civilization, for Sade, is corrupting because it imposes weakness, empathy, pity. Cruelty, then, because it's pure expression of vitality, of the individual's inherent powerful will, raw strength.
And finally, that insight into the mechanics of power, paraphrased. The suffering of others is a sensation that awakens in us a feeling of our own power.
Yeah, this goes beyond simple sadism into philosophy. The pleasure derives from the meaning of the act. It's about affirming your own absolute existence and power by completely negating another person's will, their experience, domination as an intellectual victory.
Okay, so obviously no one is suggesting we apply Sade's ethics, but Phillips insists that engaging with him intellectually is actually necessary. This seems to be where the real life application comes in. He's like the ultimate devil's advocate for testing your own morality.
Exactly. Reading Sade's, or reading Phillips on Sade, forces you to ask, why is cruelty wrong? Seriously, why? If you take God and tradition off the table, what's the solid, well-reasoned ethical foundation you're left with? Sade makes you articulate a defense for morality that goes beyond just saying, because it is.
That makes sense. And there's also value, maybe a dark value, in the way he helps understand the logic of tyranny and abuse. Phillips points out how Sade's characters always use this cold, rational, philosophical logic to justify controlling others.
That grammar of power, as Phillips calls it, is key. It helps us recognize the instrumental logic used by abusers, dictators, maybe even cynical corporate actors who rationalize awful acts by deciding their victims are somehow inferior or deserving of it, using reason itself as a weapon.
Yeah, chillingly relevant sometimes. And finally, for anyone interested in art, expression, censorship debates, Sade is still ground zero, isn't he?
Absolutely. His work remains this central, terrifying case study in the 200-year argument over censorship. It forces you to think about the line. Where does transgressive art that challenges us end? And where does dangerous material that might incite harm begin? It's a line we're still trying to draw.
So if you take one final thing away from Phillips's rigorous analysis, what would it be?
I think Phillips' real achievement is his ability to calmly, rationally dissect this body of work that was designed purely to provoke outrage. He reveals the complex, systematic thinking underneath the scandal. Say it ends up being this permanent, necessary, and yet deeply uncomfortable provocateur in the Western intellectual tradition. You can't just ignore him.
I agree completely. The biggest takeaway for me is the importance of confronting our intellectual monsters. We have to understand figures like Sade, not because we agree with them, God no, but because the uncompromising questions they raise about power, freedom, human nature, they're still incredibly urgent. His philosophy is the ultimate test case for taking absolute individual freedom to its darkest nihilistic limit. And that leaves us with a final provocative thought for you, the listener, to explore. What principle, maybe political, religious, philosophical, do you see active in the world today that, if followed to its absolute logical extreme without any compromise, poses the greatest philosophical danger? Something to think about. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.